countdown shortly here, and H minus 10 seconds, the countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trailer.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Quantel, opt-in, opt-in, go tape.
This is Publius bringing you A Step Farther Out. Your weekly radio message from the Man and Atom Society. Okay, well, I am live once again. How do you like that? Afraid it may get a little awkward here for a minute because I haven't done this in a couple of weeks, right? First thing I'm going to do is drop a link into Calm to the current iteration, which is going to be revised very rapidly after the end of the show. The current iteration of the post on Anon Radio about this week's show, because there's a picture I want you to see, which I have put there. Right, sdf.org/l/1e7. So, what is it? Well, it's a logo or masthead. I've been thinking for some time now of creating I'm a paper publications guy. What can you say? I'm a paper publications guy. And so creating paper publications is something that makes sense to me if I want to try and put a viewpoint across. And so I've been thinking for a while about zines, right? I mean, there's a whole scene. I'm more of the science fiction fanzine sort, but there's a whole scene out there. One of the very common formats is, you know, a single signature, some sheets of letter or A4 paper stapled down the center, folded in half. So you get a certain number of pages divisible by four, right? Because it's a folio. A small folio, you could call it. Not Phil Folio, that's a guy. I've met him. Well-known illustrator. Creates psychedelic letter forms sometimes, actually. Anyway, but I was looking for... I thought about titling, right? And I thought, Atomic Blasts of Propaganda from the Man and Atom Society. And I thought, well, perhaps just titling it Blast would be the better choice. See, I produced, a decade ago, more now, 10 issues of a single sheet, legal size, 8.5 by 14 inches. So, taller than letter paper, taller than A4, as a matter of fact, but a single sheet. Double-sided thing called Luna, with an exclamation point at the end. Never trust a man who publishes a newsletter with an exclamation point at the end of the title. I can tell you, I know I am one. I put out 10 issues of this, and I sort of ran out of steam, because what I was hoping for, of course, was that people would pick it up, read it, and respond to it, that I would get letters, that I would get illustrations, that I would get contributions of various kinds. And I sent out a lot of copies, mostly to science fiction conventions, to be laid out on the free tables that they have. Also to fanziners, right? People I identified through science fiction fanzines. Anyway, and I never got much of a response, and as a result I sort of ran out of oomph. I still have a lot of copies, and if anybody wants any, you know, they're also all up on the web, but if anybody wants a printed, I still have a lot of them, and I do hand them out sometimes. I do still distribute the old ones. Because I think I did some decent writing. But again, I was hoping for responses, I was hoping for letters and drawings and things that I could include. Anyway. But I sort of decided to, so I said, well, you know, I'll shorten it just the one word, blast, and no exclamation point this time. And although I started about thinking doing it as a, you know, single sheet letter A4 format, I rapidly thought, no, I want to do a booklet format this time, and with a card cover, you know, and so, I don't know, we'll see. I'm even thinking about putting on it, like, cover price $1, but of course, most of the time I'd be giving away copies, you know, maybe have a sticker or a rubber stamp. Rubber stamp might be the thing, saying, free promotional copy. There's some doubt in calm as to whether... God damn. Pardon me. Sorry about that, folks. Still having a little after effects from the surgery I had. That was unpleasant. There's some doubt in com as to whether blast is really a particularly appropriate name. You know, whether it has too many bad associations, maybe. And to an extent, I think I'm trying to ironically... What is it the kids say these days? Lean into that saying. But, yeah, I actually read, you know, the Sao Tome Principe domain, top-level domain is .st, and a few years ago I actually registered, a couple of years anyway, I actually registered atomicblah.st, which is currently aliased to man-and-atom.info. I'm thinking about, I actually want to sort of set it up as a alias to a subdomain, but I haven't, I'm doing this on SDF's web hosting, and I admit I have not figured out how to make subdomains work correctly. If anybody knows, let me know, and I'll redirect it to blast.man-and-atom.info. Anyway, but I was looking around for just to make a logo type, and I found an old pardon me. This is why my last show is pre-recorded, so you wouldn't have to listen to these distressing biological noises. But I found a book of psychedelic lettering from the late 60s or early 70s, probably the work of a guy called Ed Benguiat, and one of the, you know, it's a book, just a book of typographical samples, not complete alphabets, and you were supposed to buy, rub-on transfer letters or something, but of course, those are long since vanished from the face of the earth, but I think they were designed by a fairly famous typeface designer named Ed Benguiat. But I noticed that one of them had all the lowercase letters. I want to do it all lowercase. All the lowercase letters B, L, A, S, and T in the sample, which was handy. But also I liked the shape of the letters. I went through, I was looking at all kinds of psychedelic alphabets, because I figured that they might have something I wanted. And, you know, for Luna, I went for more of an Art Deco theme. You know, and I'm not shy about that either, because I think, you know, technological optimism, there's a sense in which the 1920s, 1930s was one of the last great bursts of technological optimism, but I don't know, there was just a particular look I was hoping to find, and I found something that's close enough that, you know, I'm not copying the letters, but I'm certainly using the sample very strongly as inspiration. Tobe is distressed that the samples in the typography book or catalog were not Abecedarian, and unfortunately it's true. Anyway, so yeah, if you want to follow the link there, again, sdf.org/l/1e7, and you can look at a rough draft. I'm going to make some alterations to it, obviously. For one thing, I want the L to be wider. I think the L is too narrow. And the shapes as I've drawn them the first time are awkward, but I had to draw them the first time to have an idea of what I want to do differently the second time, right? I'm probably going to have to go through two or three drafts before I get one that I really like. Now, but I wanted to read to you because I'm a terrible person, mostly. I wanted to read to you a little bit of the text that I was working on. So my plan for the first number of Blast is to drop in a whole bunch of quotations that I've been saving, because I've got all these books on nuclear energy, and wherever I find, and related fields of science and so forth, and wherever I find a really nice quote, I've got a commonplace book that I'll copy it over into. And I've put a bunch of these up on the web, on Tumblr, but I want to put them in print also. You know, the one from Sir Fred Hoyle, for example, in his Common Sense in Nuclear Energy, written about 1980, when he says, you know, at the beginning of this century, let's see, how is it phrased exactly? I want to get this right for you. Let's see. Here we go. No, that's not it. Anyway. But, yeah, whatever. Anyway, the quote from Sir Fred was, you know, at the beginning of this century, speaking of the 20th century, you know, the prospects for humanity were bleak, a terrible catastrophe followed by something that at best might resemble medieval village existence. Then in a few short decades, the picture changed, and by 1940, the road was open to the stars. You know, that's how I feel about it. Let's see if I can get that properly for you. Yes. In the early years of this century, there seemed to be no way ahead for the human species. No way to the stars. Nothing but a disaster of fantastic dimensions. Followed by what at best might be the village life of immediately post-medieval times. Nuclear energy changed this hopeless situation within a couple of momentous decades. By 1940, the way to the stars was there for the taking. That's how I feel about it, right? I think that's a really important quote. But I've got a lot of quotes that I want to include. And then there's some original writing and some excerpts from other things I've already written for the Matt and Adam briefing book, or, you know, excerpted, altered. I'm always revising. Revising is just the state of being for me. Anyway, and I grabbed the nearest piece of paper to hand to really start working on this piece, which I've been meaning to write for the briefing book. I think they're going to share a lot of text, right? But I've been meaning to write for the briefing book and not got around to it yet. The title was easy, The Atom in the World Energy Picture. And there's a lot of graphs and things that need to go with this. Anyway, I grabbed the first piece of paper that came to hand, and it was, of course, the same piece of paper on which I had been drawing the BLAST logo, because this is how I operate. But let me read it to you, and you can see what you think about this. The atom in the world energy picture. Energy undergirds our modern world. Energy is what makes possible the unprecedented agricultural and industrial productivity without which 7,000 million humans could scarcely live on this globe at all. Much less could any substantial number of us enjoy leisure and culture. Indeed, we daily depend for our very survival on the fixation of nitrogen by the energy-intensive Haber-Bosch process. The lion's share of this vital principle, which lights and heats our homes, turns the wheels of our factories, lightens the burden of toil in the fields and the workshops to a degree unintelligible to men of past ages, which raises and keeps us above the level of the beasts, comes from burning coal, oil, and fossil gas. And we know that cannot long continue. These leavings of ancient life are hardly unlimited in extent. And the heavier the draws we make on them, the more work, energy again, we must put forth to obtain them. What presses us even harder, however, is the waste, burning thousands of millions of tons of these fuels every single year, leaves us with gas by the thousand cubic kilometer, titanic heaps of ash, residues in short in such unmanageable quantities that we have little choice but to discharge them into our environment. Of course, such a torrent of effluvia changes our surroundings and shifts the balance of nature. From all we can tell, these shifts are not in a direction that benefits us. And so, to sustain ourselves in a world grown more hostile, we require more energy. That may be for keeping us cool in our homes, or for obtaining fresh water when the rains fail, or for building dikes against violent seas. But so long as it comes from those same fuels, the coils only tighten. So yes, that's a sample of my rhetoric, but like I say, I intend to support it with, more dry factual information and with quotations from other people and with charts and graphs. But here's the point, right, that dry factual information isn't going to change people's minds very much or very effectively or very rapidly, because if it were, it already would have. I was looking at something last night because people were saying that Microsoft's email system, for whatever reason, has embargoed any message that contains the URL newclimate.org, which includes any message containing any of the IPCC reports to which they've been contributors or what have you. And I said, well, that's pretty screwy. And anyway, I went to their website, and I started looking at what they said, and they said, oh, some things that are reasonable. It's like, okay, well, carbon capture and storage is unlikely to make any big contribution to decarbonizing global electricity supply. That, I certainly believe in that, all right? I agree with that, because I don't see any way that, I mean, even though capturing carbon dioxide from flue gases is much easier than capturing it from free air, because the concentration is 1,000 times higher or so, the obvious fact is that you're not going to find anywhere that you can store, as I say, thousands of cubic kilometers of a chemically reactive, vigorously and enthusiastically water-soluble gas. You know, you try pumping it down into the ground, what's going to happen is it dissolves away the rock, and then you get a situation like that volcanic lake in Tanzania, which occasionally turns over, belches out a giant cloud of carbon dioxide gas, and suffocates all animal life within 3 or 5 kilometers. You know, and so, you know, it's not just the facts, right? We have to present a viewpoint. We have to present a perspective. You know, the anti-nuclear viewpoint is very well established. These are the people who lead, you know, they don't have any shame, right, about telling people things that are just plain false, right? They leave people with the impression that radioactivity, for example, is contagious. That, you know, if you're exposed to radioactive substances, you'll become radioactive yourself, which is extraordinarily unlikely. But, you know, so we have to observe, right? We have to put across a viewpoint, and the viewpoint has to be one of hope, right? It's hope and positivity, not gloom and despair. Because as long as gloom and despair rules, things are not going to get better. People have to believe that things can get better in order for things to get better. I know that sounds some combination of paradox and tautology, but it really is true. You look at the situation, again, the conflict in Palestine is driven largely by the fact that the parties involved, and as I say, it's not simple two sides, right? The state of Israel is politically one of the most divided and chaotic and unstable things the world has ever seen. You know, the Jew hate propaganda would have you believe that there's such a thing as an international Jewish conspiracy, that all Jews agree on certain things, and they're all working together to make them happen. And this goes back at least to Ferdinand and Isabella. You know, Ferdinand had the Jews expelled from Spain in 1493 because he was convinced that every Jew and more in the country was actively working to kill him personally. Now, this is obviously insane, but he was the king. And so people let him get away with being insane. The Pope at the time, who was also Spanish, cackled madly. You know, he allowed as many Spanish Jews as wanted to come to the Papal States to come. He said, "Ah, ha, ha, Ferdinand has impoverished his own kingdom to enrich mine." Because, in his way of thinking, the Spanish Jews, many of them were middle and upper class, to the extent that that classification makes any sense in the immediate post-medieval period. They were literate. Some of them were physicians, some of them were, you know, they were not farm workers, right? Most of them were at least artisans, and many of them were actually of a fairly well-educated class, which was a relatively rare thing in the end of the Middle Ages, right? And so Alexander said, "Ah ha 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 ha! We can make Central Italy very prosperous by bringing in all these people who can, you know, raise our level of material culture and our level of education and so on." That Ferdinand is such a dumbass. And, you know, considering that Spain then went on to impoverish itself, completely wreck its economy while floating in oceans of gold and silver, I have to think he was right. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. You know, the fact is, if you've ever known any Jewish people, you know they don't really... I mean, it's a rabbinical proverb, two Jews, three opinions. And the state of Israel itself, I mean, you look at the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, which is called by various names by various people, and you realize, you know, who is involved in that. Well, you had, on the Israeli side, on the, you know, Zionist side, you had everything from terrified Holocaust survivor refugees, many of whom didn't want to be there, but were certain they couldn't stay in Europe, all the way to terrorists who had spent the entire Second World War blowing things up, informing on each other to the British mandatory authorities in Palestine for money, and trying to make an alliance with Hitler. Because after, as I mentioned in the past episode, you know, after the British government report came out saying that basically there was no way to have a Jewish homeland in Palestine unless you somehow got rid of all the Palestinians, which the British mandatory authorities were unwilling to do because they were responsible for the well-being of those people, what were known as the revisionist Zionists said, "Well, all right, fine, sounds good to us. How do we make that happen?" And they figured that, you know, Hitler claimed he was going to deport all the European Jews. They said, "Well, deport them here to Palestine, then we'll have a Jewish state all right, and we'll have enough people, we can throw out the British, we can push out the Palestinians and have it all to ourselves." So, you know, the Israeli side was not in any way homogeneous. You know, the state of Israel today exists only because of something called the modus vivendi between the religious Zionists and the secular Zionists, people with two very different very, very different value systems, which was, again, formulated in the late 1940s and has been showing some massive cracks. As a matter of fact, most people don't even realize that for years now, there have been almost daily protests in Israel by Israelis, by primarily Israeli Jews, against the current government, which has been doing its best to undermine that modus vivendi, which sort of defines the spheres of action, says, okay, well, in this area, the religious people will have more influence. In this area, the secular people will have more influence. And the Netanyahu government had been trying very hard to undermine that. You know, and so this is, it's a really complicated phenomenon. But what happens always is that when people are afraid, they're more likely to fight. And when fighting starts, it makes things worse. And generally, you get an outcome which is worse than what people were afraid of in the first place. And that's, you know, that's where you're at, really, is you have conflict making thing, people are afraid. People enter into conflict because of that fear, and the result of that conflict is that things are worse than you started with. Whereas if people have hope, right, if people have hope that things can get better, then they will start working to make things better. If people can see the potential of things being better, right, then it makes sense for them to put forward the effort that's needed to achieve that. They're not going to put it forth in the absence, right, in the absence of something they can look at least not except for extreme visionaries. I may not be an extreme visionary, but I'm on the fringe of it to my great cost, right? And so I'm trying to do that part of the work, which is in many ways the most difficult, is to define and identify ways in which things could be better in order to hand those to other people and say, hey, now, let's do this. So, yeah, this whole half hour, aside from the parts interrupted by coughing fits and so on, has been mostly a way for me to solicit from you letters, drawings, even just ideas for inclusion in this zine. And of course, if you want to give me some financial help towards printing expenses and postage expenses, paypal.me/PrometheusLives, patreon.com/man_and_Adam. I'm thinking of adding some new things to that if anyone wants to suggest them, because, frankly, Patreon made some changes recently that has made it a lot less pleasant to use. A lot less straightforward to use, also. And so if anyone wants to make any suggestions towards what I can do, other ways, essentially, of collecting funds for my activities, I am well open to them. But again, the main thing is I hope to receive your cards and letters at Post Office Box 1035, Fort Worth, Texas 76101, United States of America. And there is a high likelihood that I will read them out over the air. There is a high likelihood that I will send you something in return. There's also a modest likelihood that I'll include it in Blast, which I hope to get the first issue out by the end of November, beginning of December, so I can bring it with me to LosCon. And yes, the Los Angeles Science Fiction Convention, I have my schedule, I will be there, I have my train tickets and my hotel reservations. So if you're in California at all, or that area, you might think about coming down to the LAX Marriott the last weekend in November.